Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
A wet and soggy Thursday lunchtime and braving the torrential rain is Tash. It's Dix, isn't it? Tash,
yes,
Dix.
Yeah.
And you prefer Tash, not Natasha?
Tash is fine, yeah.
Tash is fine. It's nice to see you again. Last time, we worked it out, last time you came in with Matt Chatfield some years ago, and you were talking about waste.
Mm-hmm.
And your role at the council was then, you know, looking after waste, but it's grown into something that's huge now, isn't it? So what, tell us what sort of stuff you do.
Okay, so, well, thank you for inviting me here today, Ian. My job over the years has grown and evolved. So now I am the service director for waste, environment and planning. So that encompasses a lot of services that are outdoor services that people see they pay their council tax for, such as public realm, benches, beaches, coastal management, making sure that our promenades are fixed, making sure our coastal protection's in place, as well as continuing to manage waste and recycling, and our climate change strategy and delivery and the biosphere work that the council delivers.
Wow, that's huge. And some of the things you mentioned there, I'm just thinking over the last 12 months, it's gone, well, there's been a lot of issues, a lot of problems and so on due to weather and things sinking and things like that. So compare the last 12 months to maybe 10 years ago.
Okay.
How bad?
We've had in the last 12 months the third heaviest rainfall period in a 12-month period. So it has been incredibly wet across the island, particularly over the winter from 23 to 24. A lot of us have lived through a lot of really, really difficult circumstances with flooding across the island in October and November, followed by landslides in December, landslides in March, the double high tide that affected cows very badly later in the year. It's been an incredibly difficult year for many of our residents, and the council has done its very best in that reaction and response period to support our residents wherever we can over that period, in addition to the day job.
Well, you have no control over the weather. So, I mean, just say, for instance, on a day like today, do you get up and think, oh, crikey, it's going to... But I would imagine, thinking about it, you knew that it was going to rain yesterday.
Yeah, so the council's emergency management team are really tied into the Environment Agency's hazard warning scheme. So we're very aware of what potential hazards are coming up and making sure that our teams are prepared for any eventuality where there could be an issue and where we would need to respond. And that is a really well-oiled machine within the council now.
So you've got a great team of people that work with you on this, then?
Our emergency management team is small but fantastic. They are always doing their very best to keep on top of all of the alerts available and the best of planning and the best of practice for that planning.
Well, I've got to say, because I said this off air, I had a different... the same sort of view. It was just enhanced. About a year or so ago, I met with Darren Steed.
Yes, he's an emergency manager.
Who was telling us all the stuff that they have to do when, you know, these emergencies kick off and stuff. And everything, you know, you just drop everything and you have to work on these. And you think, wow, this is incredible. I never really thought. And maybe sometimes people out there that are quick to criticise, maybe they should take a, you know, have a better understanding of what goes on and what actually the hard work that people put in, just so that we can be safe, just so that things are right.
There is a huge amount of hard work that goes into that. Our core team of emergency management, under Darren, there's three of them. But when an emergency happens, they will press a phone call, and huge amounts of council staff from all departments across the council will 24 hours a day drop what we're doing to go and support whatever emergency management need, be that going up to an overflowing lake, going to knock on flooded people's doors to make sure they're okay, setting up hubs, helping with any kind of crisis that happens. So it's something that all of the council staff will buy into and do in addition to their jobs when there is a need, and we're all prepared for it and do regular training sessions with the emergency management team for.
So most people can go to bed, feel safe, not worry about their phone for the right reasons, but you probably go to bed and you're waiting for the phone to ring, thinking that there's a good chance that something... And you've got to be there, alert, ready.
Yeah, well, we do have a good rota for senior management, so there will always be a senior management officer on duty for the emergency to call firsthand. But when we're looking at those forecasts forward, that we will be aware if there is going to be something in the off that we need to be aware of. In those days, we will go to bed and you'll leave your phone on and you'll respond as you need to make sure that we're keeping our community safe.
So in the last 12 months, how many like sleepless nights have you had that, when you get that call to say...
I've taken to just dreaming permanently of landslides and flooding. It's it's always on my mind because it is... It's a really difficult issue for everyone who has had to suffer incursions of water into their homes and gardens. Anyone who has lost their properties in the last year, this has been... it's not a little thing that's happened. It is a life-changing event. And it's... helping those people, working with those people, it leaves its mark with you, and we will continue to constantly support them through anything we can do.
So what things can you put in place? Because obviously, you know, right, it just reminds us today, tomorrow's going to be bad as well. Okay, we're hitting that season where things could happen. Mm-hmm. What do you then have to assess to sort of say, right, okay, we're going to start putting things in place, and I'm guessing you need some funding and stuff, because, you know, everything costs money. So then do you have to go back to the government and prove that, hey, look, the Isle of Wight needs some money here because we've got these issues and those problems and we want to be able to put X, Y and Z in place?
Yeah, so with flooding, there's quite a few things in place already through the National Flood Resilience Programme to help householders. You may have seen last year where there was grants available for people who've been flooded and businesses that have been flooded. They're not huge, but they are grants that are available, and so the council will administer those on behalf of the government, but it's their criteria. When it comes to landslides, we don't quite have the same situation. So there's not a pot of government money to support people whose homes have been affected by landslides. There are very specific small grants that sit with the Environment Agency to help with demolitions of homes that have been affected by coastal erosion. But it's not really a funding picture that exists within central government at the moment. But we are working very hard at the council to talk to people like the Department for Transport and DEFRA to really get them to understand how the landslides around the Isle of Wight and the geology of the Isle of Wight mean that our coastal communities are being affected in ways that others aren't, and that we do need that spotlight of funding to be turned in our direction to support our communities going forward.
Well, let's hope that happens, because I don't see, I mean, much changing in there. I don't think the weather's going to change. I think this is in now, this is what we've got, and you know, the terrain is going to be affected by it all. So, you know, we are going to need some special assistance at some point, more so. I mean, it's fantastic what you're doing, and I just want to turn to something more positive that we can shout about, you know, figure-wise, and that is waste. And I know you came in a while back, and there was big news stories about, you know, we're doing really well with our waste. First of all, congratulations on the fact that whenever I go to the tip now, you phone up, you organise a spot, you go up, you do what you got to do, and you get out. And there's no queuing, there's no waiting. If you do queue up there, it's other people turning up when they shouldn't be turning up. So the system works, and it works brilliantly. So congratulations on that. But how are we doing waste-wise?
We are doing incredibly well waste-wise. Just on that subject of the tip, I mean, we're recycling 64.9% of everything that goes into those household waste recycling centres. And what's really interesting that we see from the statistics of those booking systems is we used to get 220,000 visitors a year when there was no booking system, and those queues that drove everyone crazy. We've got over 300,000 booking slots available per year, and we haven't got the queues at all because we are spread out, and it's making life safer. And it's making that experience at the tip better. So we're recycling more, which is great. But we're also doing really well on a national scale. So some people have seen recently an announcement from government for consolidated recycling schemes across the country. So everyone in the country will need to be able to recycle the same things. We'll be needing to have a food waste collection. But we're actually on the Isle of Wight already doing those things. We've actually been collecting food waste since 1998 on a weekly basis, but only 40% of counties in the UK do that. And so there's a lot of change is going to have to take place across the country, but we're in a very advantageous position in that as an island, we had that forethought and we looked forward and we made the plans that put the system we have in place now, which is a very robust system, and we are still diverting 95% of waste from landfill. We're still recycling 60% of it and 64% from the HWRC. So we're very proud of the work we've done, the work our community put into recycling well.
No, brilliant. Good for you. And I've noticed, I've just had a thing come through on my phone that the waste, garden waste, is being picked up tonight. We've got to put it out tonight at 6 o'clock. I think it's 6 o'clock,
isn't
it? 7, sorry. So 7 o'clock you put your stuff out, all right, so it'll be ready. That is a godsend, that is. Because that only started about 5 years ago?
It's garden waste has evolved with the way that we've collected it. So a long time ago, pre our current contract, you could buy bags at the libraries that you would put your garden waste in, and you'd put them out on the same day as Black Bag Day. They were all just going in with the black bags to landfill. So they weren't being composted then. It was just a collection service. The change that we made was to introduce that separate, distinct garden waste service, which does come at a charge because we need to wash our own face in local government when it comes to budgets. So it does come at that charge, which works out about £8.50 a week. But it means that you get that dedicated curbside, regular collection. You don't have to remember to phone up for it. And it all gets composted. It goes straight to composting. So it's not becoming a landfill issue. It's not becoming a future environmental issue. And the company that composts it, because we don't do that ourselves, they then sell it on as compost. And so it goes into the local economy and supports local businesses that way.
Love it. Absolutely love it. That's one of my favourite things, that is to be able to just, you cut your grass, what am I going to do with it? You put it in the green bin, you got all the other trimmings as well, put that in there as well, and we do it all year round.
And your Christmas tree later on.
And yeah, we don't have a Christmas tree. It's in the loft, and that's where it's staying. It's plastic, all right? That ain't going to happen unless you're going to take that as well. I don't think you are. But congratulations on that. If you're not part of that green, are there still spaces, or is that kind of a limited thing?
So we have, on average, 10,000 customers a year. But so we have two trucks that service those 10,000 customers. We have to, as I said earlier, work out a business model where we introduce that as a new service that covers the cost of running that service. And that's not just the collection that you see at your door. That's the staff time, the bins, the fuel, the maintenance, the tyres, the whole business cost. Which means that for us to bring on a third truck and another 5,000 customers, we would need another 5,000 customers in waiting to be able to justify local government spend of money, because we're not a private business and we can't take that risk without knowing those are there. So at the moment, we're limited to 10,000 a year, which is why every year we say this is your annual thing, and then we'll write to everyone in February and say we're ready for renewals for those who have not put on an onward subscription that rolls by itself.
Yeah.
Go through that process. And every year we get about 8% will drop off, and that will be very quickly filled by those who are waiting for spaces.
So will there be, like, in the years to come, you know, extra spaces for other people to do it as well?
We always hope that waiting list grows to a size where we can say actually that's the tipping point, and we can now say that we've got enough prepared business in that waiting list to buy another truck. But we do need to make that as an evidence-based decision, as it's local government spend, it's council taxpayers' money, and we don't want to spend that and then find that there is not enough business to operate it. So we're being very cautious in our business planning.
We should point out that, you know, on a day like today, people are out there collecting bins and doing stuff, and it's tipping down with rain, and it's uncomfortable for them, I would imagine. And I've seen them on days where it's been scorching hot, and I look out the window and I think, I wouldn't want your job. So, you know, maybe we should think, before we run things down in future and have a moan and a groan, have a think about what these people actually do.
There is a massive shout out for our crews. The crews that we have running our trucks and running the loading of them are brilliant. They walk on average 10 miles a day. They'll get through a pair of boots every 3 months, and they are out wind, rain, shine, heat waves, cheerily getting on with it and doing an amazing job every single day.
And I know it's been a few years since COVID. Through COVID, they carried on, didn't they?
We are one of the few counties that didn't step down services, because our crews were phenomenal. Again, I can't say it enough. And in the way that they responded to the concept of bubbling, to shutting down their social circles, to making sure that they only associated with small numbers of people so that we could keep everyone healthy, we could keep everyone going. And we managed not to step down any services at all during that period, other than that short break when the HWRC was closed. We realigned, we built a booking system in 8 days, which is thanks to the council's ICT software development team, who are another great group of people who just reacted, built something brand new, whole new app in a matter of days, got it back out there to make sure we could keep services running for our community.
Hi, again, fantastic what you do there and what your team have done as well. You know, not just the last 12 months, but the last X amount of years and through COVID as well, which people seem to forget because it was X amount of years ago, but we shouldn't. You know, they kept going, and here they are. They're still doing it on a day like today. Good luck. Look, I've got a list of stuff that you said you were okay to talk with. The one that intrigued me most of all was a dinghy park. What is a dinghy park and where is it?
It's a boat park on the Espalais seawalls around the island. There's one at Wheeler's Bay. There's other ones around the island where people can rent space to keep their boat.
Right.
That is a dinghy park.
Okay, so now I've learned something. Public open spaces.
Yes.
So you have to keep an eye out on those as well. What is that? Is that parks? Is that cutting the grass? Is that making sure everything's safe and so on?
So it's the principal parks, smaller parks, other open spaces that we look after, like Fort Victoria, for example. So we have a grounds maintenance contract that looks after the majority of those open spaces. We have a contract, and we also have officers who go out and do a lot of work on those spaces to make sure that they stay in good condition. Prime examples of some of the great things they've done this year are the planting that you see out in the seasonal beds, but also responding to vandalism and making sure that those are planting is renewed before even the weekend is out at times. Just really keeping our public realm, our open spaces, our parks, our playgrounds in the best condition we can with an incredibly small but dedicated team.
I'm hoping that people get from this interview is just how much is actually done for them. And yes, you do pay for, you know, you pay for a service, but, you know, in return, you're getting all of this stuff. And I mean, you know, there's on this list of stuff here, benches.
Yes.
So you have to go out and maintain benches. You think, well, a bench is a bench, but it's not, you know, if it becomes damaged or a bit ropey and it needs tarting up and, you know, you've got to paint it, rub it down and fix it or whatever, you've got to go out and do that, haven't you?
We have a team, people who, as part of their wider job in public realm, will maintain the benches, fix broken ones, exchange them for new ones when they're broken. We've also got the memorial benches that people have paid for over time that we just have to make sure we keep an eye on. And all those seating spaces in parks, because it's incredibly important for people to be able to enjoy a park actively, but also for those parts of the community who need a break and a sit down to have a bench to sit upon. So it's part of that great accessible offer in our principal parks and open spaces.
Okay, something negative now, but okay, not towards you. It's like fly tipping.
Travesty.
What are people playing at? What's you've got a system in place. Surely, you know, it's easier to use the system rather than just dump your stuff, isn't it?
You would hope it is easier to use a system than dump your stuff. And fly tipping is an absolute vandalism to our countryside and the community. It always surprises me what you will see fly tipped. Sometimes that fly tip is down to innocently not understanding that you can't just pop things on the ground next to a bin, which is technical fly tipping. But the stuff that really upsets us is when you see someone who has flagrantly gone into the countryside and dumped a fridge and half a shop front in a field because they don't want to pay the fee for their private waste to be disposed of correctly. There are plenty of ways to do it. You can go to the commercial lane at Limbottom, at the HWRC. You've got the household bit most of us go to. There's a commercial lane at the bottom. So businesses can take their own waste there and pay for it to be disposed of. There's also a wide range of fantastic private waste companies on the island who will go and collect that waste legally and correctly for the right fees and give the waste transfer notes over to businesses and private residents who want to do big house clears and all those other bits and pieces. So the options are there. There are really good private companies. The council does a bulky waste service as well as a reuse service for free. The tip's free. The commercial lane at the tip is a reasonably priced place for businesses to use. There's no excuse for fly tipping other than just not respecting our landscapes.
Basically, those people are dumping on all of us, aren't they? Because, you know, it's our island, and if you're going to go around and dump a load of stuff there and everywhere, then, you know, I'm sorry, that's just unacceptable, isn't it?
It's unacceptable, and I feel the most sorry for those businesses and individuals who, in their honest belief, have hired someone to take their waste away, and then that turns out to be a cowboy. And that cowboy dumps their stuff and we'll find their name or address or business name on it. And they'll have the proof that they gave it to someone, but that someone will have disappeared.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to track it down because those particular people who are very unscrupulous know what they need to dispose of things without being caught. They know how to hide.
Hey, look, we're running out of time. I've got a few things on your list that you wanted to talk about. And I'm learning stuff here. Geology? Do you want to talk about it, or have we done that already and I've not known it?
It's an interesting subject. I mean, the geology of the Isle of Wight is very much falls into those camps of landslides, flooding and coastal erosion.
Right.
And we do talk a lot at the moment about the geology of the undercliff and how that means that we have that relic landslide system that exists for those 12 kilometres from Luckham through to Blackgang, and it is heavily influenced by water, rain, floods, and how the underground aquifers from right back to the South Downs of England bring water all the way through the south coast that comes through and activates those land masses that you see in the undercliff.
Okay, look, I want to talk about you for a minute, if that's
okay,
all right.
No problem.
You're quite an inspiration because you've been with the council for a number of years. You've worked your way up, and now you've got a title, haven't you?
I'm a service director, yes.
Service director. See, I mean, but that's great. What advice would you give to young people that are now sort of looking for a career? You got in to the council, started at the, I'm guessing, started at more or less the bottom and worked your way up. And, you know, other people can do as well. And the lovely thing about all of this is that your knowledge is there for everyone to see, and you've learned and you've trained and you're doing everything you can for the Isle of Wight. And if people were now thinking, what am I going to do with my life? What am I going to do with my career? What advice can you give them?
I would definitely say the Isle of Wight Council is a fantastic place if you want to start a career at any age from leaving school. It is a place where you can grow, where learning is actively encouraged. There are apprenticeships, there's career grade posts. I mean, I'm a girl that moved to the Isle of Wight in 1987. My parents are Isle of Wighters. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I finished my GCSEs. I'm dyslexic. I'm a girl from the countryside. It all seemed a bit intimidating, the world out there. But, you know, I did what I was told and got a degree. Went and travelled the world, lived in different places. But I came back here because the Isle of Wight is a special place. And what I found within the Isle of Wight Council, and it's not just the departments I've worked in, it's across the council, is the most supportive environment for people to bring their skills to the table and be judged by their skills, not just their qualifications. And they will find what you're good at. It's a team of people who will help you learn, change, grow, and become the best that you can be whilst serving the community that you live in.
It's great to know, it's great to hear, because you're somebody that lives here, breathes it, loves it, and is trying to fix it and do the best it can, best you can for the island. And I just think that you know, that there's so many other people like you at the council that are doing great work, and sometimes we fail to see that. So, you know, I'm glad you came in, because as I say, people now will have a better understanding of how things work and just how busy you are. I would imagine every now and again you must pinch yourself to think, crikey, yeah, what have we achieved as an island? What have you done? You know, say especially the last 12 months, when you think of all the negative stuff that you have to put in place, and now things are, you know, a little bit more settled, and you're always forever fixing things. I just think that's brilliant. You must have those pinch me moments, don't you?
I think we all have those moments where we have to even inside sit down and say to each other, can we actually add up what we've done in the last 12 months? And what the positives are, because we are constantly, every person in the council, every employee across that whole range of services, internal and external, are running at that goal of delivering things better, fixing things better, working for things better. And taking that deep breath and reflecting is a really important thing for us to do.
Well, you and so many other people at the council are a real credit to the council. I think sometimes we just have to take our hats off and say, hey, look, you came, you spoke, I listened, and now I'm switched on with it. And hopefully other people will be as well. It's lovely to see you again, and you'll come back again, won't you?
Oh, absolutely. Anytime you want to hear from me, let me know.
Let's hope the sun's out next time we come round.
It is a bit damp out there.